Hello, sacred beings. Welcome to Sacred Sister Podcast. Join us as we normalize the magic and sacralize the mundane.
Expanding consciousness and deepening awareness to support you in leading a life full of healing, meaning, and magic.
I'm your host, Britt Lynn, energetic cartographer and personal transformation coach.
I'm your host, Tana Lina, a certified astrologer, rebirth coach, and sorceress.
If you're brand new here, welcome, beloved. We are so grateful, so happy to have you here. If you're a seasoned sacred being, welcome back. Thank you so much for your support, for your listenership, and we look forward to seeing you in the show.
Let's dive in.
Wow. Welcome, everyone. Welcome, Sacred Sister Podcast audience. And welcome, Miss Emily. We are so excited to have you here. And of course, hi to my co-host, Britt. We're so excited to have you here, Emily. She is a Montessori micro school teacher and the creator of the Rainbow Room, which is actually the school that my daughter is going to. And we just feel so blessed that we have met you, Emily. You are like literally my go-to person. And I have you, Jacqueline, of course, my little boy here in the background. We were like, my nanny is late. So we were like, this is the perfect episode to have little baby noises in the background for the beginning. But yeah, we just feel so blessed to have you here, Emily, and to know you. You are my go-to person with any motherhood questions, conscious motherhood. And this episode is literally all about like raising conscious children and micro schooling. What is the future of the school system and a child-led education versus the education that most of us were raised in? And so this episode is not just for parents, but it's also and especially for people who are not parents yet, to just kind of help them see children's education from a new angle.
Yeah.
So thank you and welcome.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. That was great. Thank you. Yeah, I think education, it's really aligned with what you're talking about, because a lot of things that I've noticed is natural motherhood and natural parenting and natural really everything is having an awakening, right? And so it's very interesting. I think we're going to see a huge shift to these things that I've been thinking about for years, because it's very hard to raise a child and be thinking about breastfeeding and like doing all the things and on and on. And then there's this huge cutoff at like 5 years old that like you send them out into the very traditional world. So that's where the disconnect, I think, is. And so I think it's very interesting to explore those things, because I think a lot of people are in that space. And then there's, yeah, a huge disconnect in the education world.
Yeah. You know, I love that you bring that up. I had never heard of micro schooling before Hannah mentioned to me that they were considering that for their daughter, Emma. And just for anyone who's listening right now, I'm sure there are a ton of people who have never heard of this before. Yeah. So can you explain a little bit about what microschooling even is and how it functions, like what your inspiration was for stepping into this role for your community as well?
Yeah, so the idea of microschooling is, first off, it's really hard to kind of conceptualize all of it. And even in the community, we struggle with that. But the best way I think to explain it is like a one room schoolhouse, kind of a, like a going back to that idea of somewhere nearby that the children can go to that is kind of mixed ages and very intuitive and not so government run and all these different things. That's a big part of microschooling, is that it's not a private school. It's not a government run agency. It's basically more of a community, more of like parents coming together. If I look forward to like what I would hope for the future, I would almost envision like you might go to a schoolhouse feel. And then in those classroom, like in the hallway, you would imagine that you would, as a mother, knowing your child, would be able to say like, well, there's Miss Emily's classroom, the rainbow room, and there's Miss Jeanette's, and on and on. And each parent, you get to kind of see if you vibe with that room, that feeling. And then, of course, a big open space and playground and all those things, so that microschooling isn't so locked into this idea of 10 to 12 kids. I like the idea of micro ecosystems within a larger ecosystem of like kids and families coming together. But then within that, there's choice and balance and what's right for my child and who do they connect with and what's their philosophy versus what are our goals for our family. So a lot of choice. I'm really obviously a huge proponent of school choice and those kind of things. So I want parents to be put back in the driver's seat of having a choice versus like, do we either spend $10,000 to $12,000 a year, or do we just like turn over this raising of this child to the institutions? You know, I want them to be like full partners in what they get to choose for their child because they know them best.
Yes. And that's brings such more power to the parent. And I think for a lot of us, that may feel a little intimidating too, to think like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be the teacher of my child, because we are so conditioned to think that we need some outside authority to teach our children the best about life in school. And, you know, like, and I think that's something that we also want to touch on. Homeschooling or unschooling versus the traditional schooling. And before we're going to dive into that, do you have anything for us, like a mantra that you're working with, like some medicine that you want to share with our audience before we're going to dive fully into the topic?
Sure. I was really intrigued by your like ask, but as I thought about it, of course, I was like, okay. So some of my go-to mantras are, you know, I'll just like, and just, I've been saying these ones for years and I chant them with my children, and things naturally and magically come and go our way. And then I like to say, no matter what, I am happy, healthy, safe, and secure. No matter what, I and my loved ones are happy, healthy, self, safe, and secure, no matter what.
Isn't that so, it's so big. No matter what, I'm happy, healthy, safe, and secure. These are like the foundational elements to help us feel in touch, connected. It gives us like the safety, the jumping off point to really engage with life, right? Because if we're imbalanced in any of those ways, like those come first.
Totally. And it allows for a lot of change, or like a lot of, you know, it's not saying I'm in this house with this car, this place of being. It's like, no, just inside I will be happy, healthy, safe, and secure. And things will naturally and magically work out for us. The person.
I love that too. Like things will naturally and magically work out for us. Oh, yes.
I'm enthralled with this. Obviously, it's my first time really engaging with anyone who surrounds themselves with this type of work. So, am I right in thinking that your class? So these kids are with you, a group of kids is with you all day long. And what are the age ranges? Like Hannah has told me that there's quite an age range. Mm-hmm. And in that case, I'm like, wow, like how do you find things for, are there like quarters of your room that are set up for kids to do different things? Like how is the young one able to chill and be psyched in the same room as the oldest? Like how does this even work?
Oh, I'm glad you asked, because I think that is something that I can kind of get, like, I'm so used to it that it's good to hear that. There's a really good term, and it's called like de-schooling. And it's kind of the idea that, like what Hannah mentioned earlier, we are so ingrained with this schooling, like, you know, idea. It's 120, 140 years old that, like, we've even lost the idea that, like, children just used to be natural and just used to be out in the world and just, I mean, they were working at very young ages and educated within the family, et cetera, et cetera. So what I've done is kind of flip the script of, like, usually in a traditional school, you would have the idea that, like, you know, okay, everybody comes in and we need to be on the same, we sit in a desk, we have a schedule, we have, you know, the little check boxes of what we're going to learn today. And I wanted to create an environment where really anybody could come into. And I like to use the words capable, curious, and creative, because it's just so fun to see how they just move within the environment. I have a thousand things. It's called invitation to play, invitation to learning. And so it's really just kind of this open book to see what, imagine as an adult, you walk into a huge creative maker space and you can touch and do anything you like. I mean, some people are going to go right for the engineering stuff and just like tinker around. And then other people are going to go paint or dance or move, or it's just a really creative space that allows the child to forget about, like, the other kind of I'm six and you're three and et cetera. And just really kind of tune into what's important to them that day, or what looks attractive. What do they want to experiment with? And on the flip side, mixed ages are, that's a huge Montessori thing, but it's something that we intuitively get as well. Like when Hannah, when you see Emma and Jacob together, I mean, it's not like they don't get each other. They, like, it's so beautiful to see one lead the other and take care of the other. And I get to see that a lot in Rainbow Room. The natural empathy and compassion of the child really comes out. They care for one another. And the older ones love to teach the younger ones little things that they may have just learned. And there's a lot of research to show that children really progress well by seeing, and we all do as adults, we're not going to learn as much from somebody who's 10 levels above us. We're going to be like in awe of them, of like, wow, that's so cool that they've accomplished that. I have no idea how to put myself from there to there. But if you're someone that's just a little bit more successful, or a little bit more, has more mathematical skills or writing skills or whatever, and they're looking back and just saying like, oh yeah, just here, here, and here, they still remember the five steps that it took. So a 10-year-old teaching a 7-year-old is actually way more effective than even an adult coming back and trying to twist their brain back to like, what did it feel like to first understand what math was about, or writing, or things like that. So that's my favorite part about Rainbow Room, is the mixed ages. And I feel like my superpower is being able to have like a bird's eye view of where everybody's at and monitor their, I'm not going to interrupt a child that's building a huge, you know, magnet castle. I'm going to pull aside the child that kind of has the look on their face like, what am I doing? And I'm going to read to them, and I'm going to ask them if they want to start with their morning basket. And a morning basket is essentially just kind of a prepared little, more traditional benchmarks, math, reading, writing, but at each of their levels that I prepare ahead of time. But it's also got choice within that basket. There's no like, hey, you need to do these amount of things on this. It's more, we have time, we have space. If this is not, like, what are you thinking today? Like, you know, do you want me to read you a book? Do you want to play with these number materials? Do you want to work on your workbook? And I get to see firsthand how cool children are and how they will motivate themselves. I mean, I've seen children sit down and do workbooks that were resistant to any sort of thing like that, who who like challenge each other and say like, I'm going to do 10 pages today. No, my goal is 15 pages. And they'll just sit down and like, and you're just like, it has nothing to do with me. I'm like standing back, just like, hey, let me know if you need help. And it's really the, I feel like I'm really close to like the natural motivation of human beings and getting to just kind of see what that's all about from the ground up.
Mm-hmm. And it gives such a deeper trust to the child, you know, and trusting in their ability to learn naturally. Absolutely. Like even I was just reading something about John Holt, who is the, you know, the founder of the term unschooling, and he wrote amazing books that I'm still yet to read, but just like what I've seen so far, I'm like, oh my gosh, those sound amazing. But he was saying how he did research that babies are actually learning much easier and quicker than adults do. And he was like a professional teacher in a private school, and he was seeing all the traditional education and how it is in the school system and how the students learn for that test, for that exam, and then they write in the exam and then afterwards forget everything that was tested. And I remember those times too. You too, probably, Brett, right? And Emily.
Cramming, for sure. Cramming the information, hoping to God it stays, and then afterwards being like, okay, cool, never have to think about that again.
And so he was like, what is the purpose? Because officially, yes, they learned that. We can check it. Like, yes, we did the exam. They got the grade. Check, check. They learned those history lessons or they learned that math. But actually, what actually stayed within them? What did they actually learn from it? And ultimately, it's just, I mean, I learned how to learn for exams and how to make the best out of, you know, getting the best grades with the least amount of effort. That's what I personally learned. And I know for myself, I hated school. I hated going to school. I remember my mom would always tell me, you have to go to school, like you have to go to university, you know, otherwise it's just, especially, you know, I'm come from Germany, there's even that focus on traditional education even more so. And everybody that wouldn't go to school, to gymnasium, which is like the higher grade high school, and to university would be like, oh, they're not going to make it in life, you know, or they're going to fall behind. And it was such a, it was such a drag. Like I had to drag myself for school. I had good grades because, you know, I was able to, I knew how to learn for exams, but it wasn't enjoyment. It wasn't something that I really loved doing. And when I see Emma going into Rainbow Room, and when I read about what you do with Rainbow Room and, you know, the days, and I watch the Instagram stories of what you do with the kids, I'm like, oh, my inner child is like, that's the school I wanted to go to.
Me too. I created what I wanted, both for my own children and like what I would have enjoyed. And I think what you just said, like, touches on another concept that's important, is like this idea of like receipts of learning. So much of the entire system is built around calming parents' fears of like what your child is doing. Are they learning? Are they getting through? Or like all this anxiety, instead of having the parent do the work of like this anxiety of like, you know, is my child going to make it? Are they going to, how? So few things that we have control over, but it is an anxiety. But so those receipts of learning, forcing the child to sit down and like produce something that we can hand to them to look, see, they're learning.
They're doing a good job.
Instead of to be around children, yeah, that trust, you just see that they're pure magic. Like they are learning all the time. And I like to liken it to like, if we started setting up little schools and we really push this idea that, you know, babies won't make it if you don't take them to a talking and walking school, you know, they won't make it. So you need to, which school are you going to go to? Like, you know, starting at 6 months so that they can learn how to talk and walk. And hey, we can't just be playing. These kids need to get on the program. And, you know, what are you going to have a kid that doesn't walk all day? I mean, talk. And it's like, we take it for granted that like these children go from like totally open, you know, little things in our arms to they are so self-motivated. You see it every day with Jacob. It's like they're moving, they're testing, they're tasting, they're thinking, they're, oh, what does my body do when I do this? From the outside, it might look like play if we were putting it in those same parameters of school of like, yeah, but what is this really? How are they going to learn? But if you see it over the arch mm-hmm. of 6 months, that day that they learn to pull themselves up to the table and then how excited they are of like, oh, look at what I can do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that encouragement of a parent is just standing back. We don't think that we have to like teach them those things and we don't. And I've, with my children, of course, I'm like responsible for the dozen Rainbow Room kids. So I have more structure to them. But my own kids are like my really, my own social experiment. I've tried to very much stay back and see like if these things play out. Like, will my children learn to read? Mm-hmm. If I don't, we got to learn how to read. What are phonics? What are these things? What are these things? I thought, what are other ways that we could do this? How could I create this love of stories and books and the written word, which mm-hmm. I love so much? And I mean, it's way too complicated to get into like all the semantics of that. But I basically just, that's how I came to a lot of my knowledge is like, how could I do this differently and see if it works? Like, I'm kind of like a scientist in that way of like testing and thinking and tweaking and like, I can attest that my three older children read very well and have that when they have been tested, they're at like middle school, 10th and 12th grade vocabulary, and they're 6, 8, and 10. So just, it works even in the traditional sense. I think all that other stuff is to justify the education system. Mm-hmm. I really think children will learn. I mean, the founding fathers mm-hmm. never went to school. Like, think of all that they accomplished. I love the musical Hamilton, and he's a true testament of like a self, I always tell my children, a self-starter who got a lot mm-hmm. smarter by working a lot harder. Mm-hmm. I'm always trying to encourage that, like self-starting, like you can do anything you want. You just mm-hmm. have to follow that intuition, that motivation, that thing that comes from inside of you. Mm. Don't get too bogged down by what everybody else is telling you to do.
I love that. I feel like honing that self-starting energy comes so much from having someone behind you that's really propping you up, that lets you know that they believe in you, that's not just looking at you to finish this assignment or stop talking or, you know, like the assimilation to the programs, to the sit and be quiet and you're graded on how well you do these set of parameters that they have set up for you, which is how well you listen and how well you show up and how well you be quiet and how fast you get to your seat and how much you ask for permission. And, you know, it's so fascinating when you really look at what the markers are in public school in the grades of 1 through 5. It's like, get in a line, follow the leader, follow the line, like stay in line, don't talk out of turn. I just want to mention this because I know that there are probably some listeners who are like this too. I felt so shut down in my grades 1 through 5 because I just lived to talk, you know, Gemini stellium, I lived to talk. And when my parents passed away, I was packing up their house and we came across this box of all my progress reports from grade school. And I would look on the progress reports and literally like half of them were like, super smart girl, won't stop talking. Talks way too much, needs to stop talking, always commenting on how I needed to like lower the amount that I would be talking. And I just love the open format of this type of learning, because it's true. It's like, what better child can we hope to have enter the work, not even the workspace. It's like the new earth workspace of leading from a heart-centered inclination, but then the child who is fully in touch with what it is that they care about, what it is that they're interested in, and who's really had years of being encouraged to really hone those skills.
Yes. Yes. I love that story, because when you think about it, right, there's so much that goes into the refinement of a child or whatever you want to call it. But this is where, when people talk about socialization and being around other children, I felt very confident that I could provide my children and they could provide themselves with the education part. That wasn't even the hard part for me. For me, the harder part was trying to think of, like, how do I create a world where my kids can play with other kids in the way that I know is truly healthy, instead of just a bunch of kids just going out there and rejecting each other. And then, you know, I've seen it. And actually, I've seen both sides of the coin. You know, I can see how draining it is when they go and they might play in an environment, but it's a very harsh, and they have to figure out how to compete and how to, like, you know, how to deal with the queen bee of the playground, and how to, you know, versus an environment. I always say the best thing I do in Rainbow Room is just to help facilitate the language of how to play, how to be together. And so why I bring that up, Britt, is because I think so much of this comes from the teacher, right? These little report cards and these, like, so-and-so talks too much. So-and-so doesn't speak enough. So-and-so doesn't do this. So-and-so doesn't do that. But that actually should all be coming from the other children. So children will very much guide each other. And this is why play-based learning is so important. The play-based is so misunderstood, because everybody just thinks they're playing. But it's actually the refinement of the child, because when they're very engaged in this idea of, like, well, let's play family, which almost all kids across the board are like, let's play family. There's so much negotiation. There's so much, like, getting along together, figuring out the roles. But the children will be so invested in the play, they don't want it to end. And so they will refine themselves. If they're being too bossy and someone gives them that feedback of, you're being too bossy, then they have to decide, do I leave? Do I, like, still, do I tone it down? They have to watch each other, the cues, if someone isn't playing, they have to bring them in, like, what did you want to play? And, like, what role do you want to be in? They have to do so much negotiating. And I love it when I hear, okay, let's pretend. Okay, let's pretend. Let's pretend. Let's pretend. Let's pretend. When you hear that over and over with kids, you can just back away and just be, like, so excited, because that's what we're trying to facilitate, is, like, let's pretend, let's negotiate, let's coordinate, let's work together. And that helps, instead of a teacher telling somebody they talk too much, which I don't think you did. I talked way too much. Those were my same report cards. But it's different when you're in a play setting and you get that feedback from your playmate of, like, hey, can I say what I wanted to play? Or, like, you know, like, all that little, that stuff is so interesting to watch how the kids, that's what play-based learning is really all about. And that's where they get so much. And so that's what the Rainbow Room, while I do the other stuff, it really is kind of creating a safe space for play that they can really do all that skill development and confidence, and I matter, and I'm somebody, and I'm important, and my friends like me, and all that kind of stuff all plays a huge part as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that just reminded me when you were saying that kids are the ones giving you the feedback, and it's actually way more powerful than if an adult gives the child the feedback.
Absolutely.
You probably remember that still, Britt. That was, we were up in Mount Charleston. Was it a year ago or 2 years ago? And it was with the daughter of Britt's sister, Katie Cat, is her name, or Cadence, but we call her Katie Cat. And she and Emma, they love playing with each other.
Yeah.
And so we were like camping and they love playing. And Emma, she's a strong-willed child, right? Mm-hmm. She's a natural leader. So she's usually the one saying, let's play this. You be that. I be that. You know, she makes the directions. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We need those.
Yeah. Definitely. And Katie Cat is usually the more introverted child that was kind of like following along with what Emma was saying. But what really happened at that time was Katie was just got the courage to say to Emma, you can't be the queen all the time. And that was huge because after that, Emma realized, oh, I need to give Katie Cat some time so that she can decide of what we're going to play next.
Yeah. Just and that awareness.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That awareness. When if we were to interact and be like, oh, Emma, come on, let's have Katie Cat like do that and stuff, it wouldn't have been as powerful or as impactful for her. But now she still remembers that Katie Cat said that to her. You can't be the queen all the time. And that might be even a sentence that stays with her to remember, okay, I can shine my light. Yes, I am a leader, but others are too. And I can encourage them to lead as well.
Mm-hmm. And you know what is so fun with the backstory of that story is that it was so many conversations of priming Katie to say something, because sometimes they would play and then on the way home, she'd be like, you know, when I'm like, yeah, how was that for you? What did y'all get into? Like how, you know, just getting feedback on the interaction and stuff. She's like, oh, it's good. But I always feel like Emma's just bossing me around and she's telling me what to do and all these things like multiple times. And I'm always like, well, do you let her know that it doesn't feel good whenever, you know, this is going on? And she's like, no, you know, so it was like this bolstering of confidence too, that like maybe she hadn't learned in the dynamics of friendship yet, that like, when something's happening that doesn't make you feel good, it's okay to tell them and let them know. And actually, probably nothing's going to change until you have the courage to let yourself be seen, right? To vulnerably share your emotions with them, because that enters you into a new playing field where change is possible. And then you learn more about each other, about like what occurs in that space.
Mm.
And you get to engage more with each other. And it's a potential for even, what's it called, like argument potentially to come up or something. It's like, who knows? Until you do it, we don't know.
And I love what you just said, Britt, because it's like, that is the backstory. All these kids are going through that like all the time, you know? Think of how it's just such a different, like if you're in an environment that's aware of those things and is trying to give you the language, just like you were doing with your niece, like, honey, you can say something, you could say it like this. And like, I give the kids a lot of, I always say like, you can say, I give them the exact words that they could go and say,
yeah, so
that it becomes part of their like inner vocabulary.
Yeah.
Like, hi, can I play? What are you guys playing? You know, and including themselves. And it's so powerful. And just think like, as women now, like we, to have that playground, right? To learn those little, like speaking up for ourselves and saying, hey, no boundaries and all that stuff, to have been testing and playing with that since we were Emma's age. I mean, just think of how much more empowered we would be of like practicing that since 3-4 years old of like, that doesn't work for me. Yeah, could we try that? I know that this about myself and that. To have that modeled for 20 some odd years, you know, like we would be so much further as a society, instead of the opposite of like, you speak too much, you don't listen, you don't stand in line, you don't, you know, follow the rules.
That makes me just think so much about how It's like emotional intelligence that we're able to give these children too whenever we're talking to them like they're people. Right. It's funny. I just saw a comment on Facebook yesterday that someone was like, you know, I realized while talking to my kid, if I just talk to them like a big kid or like an adult. And I'm like, what an interesting way to think about that, because it's true. A lot of us have this way of talking to children that we talk to them as though they're unintelligent, that they're less than, that they don't get complexity, that they don't, you know, they're so much less developed. Yes, but also that we help them grow from our tutelage, the way that we respect them and know that they hold the capacity to hold nuance and complexity and multidimensionality. That was something that I really learned through witnessing Hannah, because I don't have any kids yet, but it was so fascinating to witness that Hannah never really had that, like, oh, super baby talk stage where it's like you talk to them like they're freaking just zero intelligence whatsoever, which is fine to be cutesy tootsy with the kids sometimes, but also just holding this regard for their intelligence and just like witnessing Emma grow up so immaculately conscious from such a young age. Like, my husband too was super on the fence of even knowing if he wanted to raise kids with the way the world was going. And it gave him so much faith too, to just witness like this different way of parenting and how she really responded to that. And it's like, oh yeah, if we treat them like they're super intelligent, conscious beings, that's the way that they grow. That's what they know.
I love that you said that about Hannah, because just as you were talking about it, I was like thinking about Emma specifically when you said, oh, they can understand nuance and complexity. Hannah, it's working, because the conversations I have had with Emma are just like, I'm in awe, you know, just when you see a beautiful sunset and you're just like, ah, you know, just to witness like this little girl that can tell her friends about vegetarianism, that can tell her friends about like the universe. And she does it so well. And I just, oh my gosh, I love that little girl. Children are the best of us. It's really the wounded children that are now adults that are harming the next generation every time. And it's that generational cycle. It's so much also comes from the safety, you know, like a child, there's so much that goes involved with, how do I want to say this without, there's a lot of accounts and beautiful things that are like hands-free mama. What's my other favorite one? I just love if it comes to me, but this idea of like, a lot of us were raised with violence from small to large, of like children are controlled with our hands and things like that. And that is, wow. If there's anything that kills a child's spirit, it's that. And I can just witness and testify that that is where a lot of the problems and issues start. A child that is like raised without that and is raised consciously is not going to settle for someone manhandling them or doing things to them. They're just going to be, what? Oh, this is so far off my awareness of like what love is that they will reject it outright. So there's so many levels to like, what kind of adult are we really raising? I mean, so many people are focused on things that we just said, like, we'll never come up again, spending an entire year on geometry instead of financial literacy or conflict resolution or public speaking or confidence or any of these things that we all know really matter.
Yeah.
Especially in the day of the internet, you know, there's so much. It's such an interesting, it's all tied together, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
I just got full body goosebumps when you were saying about that a child that is consciously raised is not going to let, is not going to enter those partnerships where they're not being treated right. And that includes like the love partnership, but also business partnerships and, you know, being in jobs. And I think what we see in this world, a lot of the unhappiness and the depression and the anxiety that is skyrocketing, especially in the Western world, especially here in the United States, is because of the wounded child inside of us, where we didn't learn how to tune into our needs. We didn't learn what really brings us joy. We didn't learn how to state our boundaries. We didn't learn how to regulate our emotions. We didn't learn how to resolve conflicts within each other, because we've always been trained, oh, there's an authority above me who's going to tell me what to do. And I have to look at the authority to know what my next steps are. And then you get out into the adult world and suddenly you don't necessarily have that authority of a teacher anymore, because you're out of school now. And then it's like, okay, who's my authority now? Now we're going to try to put this authority somewhere outside of ourselves. And then throughout this time, we first, again, we have to relearn to bring that authority within ourselves again, to have our higher self be the authority, to have that sovereignty within ourselves. But it's a learning process, and we have to unlearn a bunch of stuff, and we have to integrate the traumas, and we have to break patterns. And it's a bunch of healing that a lot of adults are currently going through. And this is something that Britt and I are working
facilitate.
With our clients. You know, we wouldn't have a job if that wasn't the case. So we're, you know, this is part of what we're doing, like helping people really reconnect with their inner authority, with their sovereignty.
Yes.
And that inner child is within us still. That inner child that has been wounded by the traditional schooling system is still living inside of us. And if we don't take the time to listen to it, it will take control unconsciously. And it will give us more anxiety and stress. And we don't really know how to fully hone into ourselves and our next steps to take, and really feel that joy in life and peace and love and all the things that we desire so dearly. It starts with the inner child.
And think all those things, I just got goosebumps because I think about like all those things that you just said, that's the work of a child. Those things come so naturally to children. That's why I said they're the best of us. They're magical. They're just a child that is raised consciously is all of those things. They find delight and joy in the smallest flower, in the, like, you know, all these tiny things that just come so beautifully naturally to them.
Mm-hmm.
And to break that, to say, no, what you like is not important. You need to come over here and do what I need you to do. And da, 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 da. And you can just see how that gets derailed. And so the modern system is train your kids up to be in that system, then go through that system, deny, 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 go through all this angst and anger as a teenager, which a teenager is a whole nother podcast, but like of what we do to them. And then you get set out in the world and maybe you're successful and maybe you've checked all those boxes and you went to the good school and you got the good job. But I'm sure you guys know and work with people who are successful by the outer sides. My rep is like, I'm a doctor, I'm a this, I'm a, you know, I do all these cool things and my spreadsheet looks really good, but my inner world is a mess and I'm so unhappy. I don't care that I have all the outside markers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a mess and my relationships are a mess and everything's a mess. So that seems to be the thing. And then by your 40s, you're supposed to spend a decade like reconnecting. What a joke. Like, why not just follow the natural thing? Save our children so much time, effort, so that, and I've seen it firsthand. Everybody says, yeah, but well, we need doctors and engineers and all that stuff. We should be mining children for their natural talents, because I have seen kids that will just build all day long. That's how they bring work. That's how they work. They already come with these natural talents.
Yeah.
So if we could encourage this, we would have no trouble finding children that want to be all the things of the world. Mm-hmm. We don't have to do really anything except encourage them to follow that stuff and not weigh them down with, if you have a child that is obsessed with math but hates writing, maybe we get them to a benchmark that is acceptable of like, can you read and write? Do you know what an adjective is? A noun, a verb. Cool. Go with the math. Run all day with that. Mm-hmm. That will help us as a society. As for them, don't make their life a living hell trying to make them get something that we can't even answer why it's important or what it's all about. You know?
Yeah.
So, and that they'll never use in like the real world majority of the time. Although I will say, I feel like it has to be said, I lived for school and I lived for my high school math classes. I really excelled in like English, reading, and math, but math were always my higher scores. And I, even though I don't use anything from my trigonometry honors class, the fact that I learned how to use those formulas and the fact that I could just lived to get lost in math equations and math formulas and figuring these things out, like, so much. I'm so glad that I had that education and that even though I don't use it, I wouldn't have traded it for anything in the world, because I feel like that is the only place I would have experienced that. Mm-hmm. Because I rebelled so much against the school system. I was always getting RPC'd and always in detention and always like getting in trouble, but I loved the class aspect. I love the social aspect. I loved being in big productions in my theater, yeah, which might not be something that I would have had, you know, otherwise. But also I knew that I never wanted to go to college. So it's like, I'm not going to freaking go to college to take math or English or reading or writing classes. So I had to say, freaking loved a lot of aspects of school too.
I think you're touching on a big question that always comes up, you know, of like, well, what about the future? What about, you know, what about when your kids? And honestly, that's what I think about all the time now, because my daughter is 10, my oldest daughter. I don't think we have the systems yet. That is my whole every day trying to think about that. Because just like I said, I created the Rainbow Room because I could homeschool my children. I could teach them to do math, et cetera. But I couldn't create a social world for them, just like you described. I couldn't create opportunities for to take them on meandering paths of like, well, who knew that you'd love trigonometry until you had somebody there that taught it well and you were just like, this is the coolest thing ever. So it's still very much my ponderings, and anybody that's out there, I think that's something we're wrestling with as a culture of like, how do we do this? And I think everybody agrees. Well, yeah, the system's broke, but you know, what else can we do? Because it's so big, it's like too big to fail or whatever. But it's failing. Britt, I don't know how old you are, but like maybe a decade ago when you were in high school, things have already changed so dramatically. Thinking of like, you know, social, like the improvement of like social media, or I don't know if it's an improvement, but you know, a lot of the thing podcasts and things that I listen to is just what a huge cutoff we went through during 2012, 2013, and how what just the entire world is different, where a lot of us are nostalgic for those more fun parts of school, you know, away from your parents, freedom, time to experiment, meet new people, things like that. So we're not there yet. I'm actively trying to think of how we can recreate that. And so far, I'm very inspired by did you see the We Crashed with Jared Leto and everything like that? Mm-mm. The idea of co-working spaces. I really like that idea for teenagers of a space that they can go create, do things together, have mentors there, but much more freedom. And we could save them from that thing of like, there is a huge cliff that we drop kids off of, right? We tell them what to do through 18. We tell them this is how and why and what you're doing all this stuff for. And then it's a, an abyss. And I am actually coaching a friend's teenager right now through that of like, nobody tells you that you won't see any of these people that, well, not any of them, but like many of these people that you cared about so much, you won't see. Well, maybe for 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. And your whole world is just going to be totally different. And then they send you to a college world where that's all self-led. And so my part of my story is that I went to that college world and dropped out my first semester because it was like overwhelm and balls in the air and like, duh, I had my mini breakdown and I had already, or they call it the quarter life crisis or whatnot. And this is, it happens to a lot of kids. We should be teaching kids to listen to the inside of them and manage themselves from very young ages. Mm-hmm. And I do that with my daughters, and it's so fun to see that come alive of like, you know, oh, mom, I just cleaned the kitchen and made a to-do list for myself. And I'm like, I can send you out in the world right now, you know, like it's, yeah. It's fun to just, I think there's a lot that could be said for self-led, and that is the world that we're going to live in, right? Like for people that are going some of these more traditional paths, I don't know that they're... Bye, Britt.
Bye. Love you. Okay. For everyone that, sorry, I'm not going to interrupt, but I'm quietly getting off. I have a call right now. Love you. Bye. Thank you so much, Emily.
My pleasure. There's a lot coming, right? And we're shifting as what the workforce demands and needs for people that are thinking they're just chugging along and doing what was needed 10, 20 years ago of you go to college and you get a good job. Where we are now in the workforce looking for people that are dynamic, creative, can think for themselves, can work for themselves, can work from home. I mean, we all know that that takes a huge self-management style. Mm-hmm. And so to raise kids up in this way that is actually going less towards a more managed or like, you know, open style, I thought COVID was going to be this, I was naively thinking it would be this huge awakening of like, you know, they'll set children free to like learn and they'll have loose parameters. Instead, they made everybody like sit and like be on, you know, 9 a.m. here, right here, clicking in. Hi.
Clicking into the laptop. Yeah. I feel like the good thing about COVID was that the school system got so intense and so ridiculous on so many levels. I mean, the mask mandates for little kids, the distance that they have to be during break, you know, just like intense situations that caused probably a lot of trauma in those children that they have to work through in their adult life. But I think for a lot of people, they actually did wake up and are like, okay, I don't want to have my child in public school, but what else is there for me, for my child to do? And I think that's where a lot of people are looking into, you know, homeschooling, unschooling, microschooling, and just a few pieces of what you were touching on. I think even with the self-led, like allowing, like going back to how it was before the school system started, the traditional school system, and how that school system, and I know that you know it even deeper, the history of it. Can you share a little bit about why we even think that that is the traditional school system? How did it even create it? Who created it? And what's the actual intention behind it?
Well, it's wild because so much of the nostalgia that I think people have for school is really a nostalgia for childhood. Like, but childhood was experienced through school. So we have a nostalgia for school. Just Britt just said it, you know, of like, yeah, but I saw my friends and, you know, and I think that's where a lot of people are coming from. And I get it. Trust me, I get it. Of like, yeah, but like, they're really enjoying it. Like, I get it. There's just a trade-off. And this year might be going well, but you don't know what, you know, next year, none of us know, you know, I don't know. Nobody knows. That's part of parenting. That's what I'm trying to explain. But to speak to what you're asking is the system was created. The school system was created. It was actually very rejected in the beginning. Just like now people are like, homeschooling, how could you ever? That used to be what everybody did. This idea of sending your kids to just be influenced by other people. And like, that was very foreign and they had a hard time getting people on board. It was a long process. They had rules and laws. They got laws involved, all for the point that the social engineering of we need workers, we need factory workers. For them, they saw the future, just like I'm saying, the future is creative, self-led people. They were saying the future is people that can get up, go work like in an assembly line and do the things and listen to the little outside cues and kind of be like robots, because of course they didn't have the machines and the robots like we do now. So it's very dark, the story of why we created institutionalized school. It has never been truly for the best of children. Now, that's the macro. Of course, every micro teacher, if any teacher is listening, I think teachers all have the heart of doing what's best for children. That's why they're led to this profession. It's just listening to their heart. And I think a lot of them were awakened through COVID too, of like the things I'm being asked to do, regulate, like, you know, that is so far from what I know is best for children. And what, it's just wild. This isn't working. None of it's working, and getting no answers back. It's definitely some stuff going on right now in the question of what is school. And it's exciting, but to speak to that, anybody you read about in history, I can guarantee was quote unquote homeschooled or unschooled, mm-hmm. because it didn't exist. We modeled it after the Prussian, the dark roots around those uprisings in Europe. So.
Yeah. And it served its purpose. The people worked in the factories and then, you know, did the job that they needed to do. And now we have robots that do that. And a lot of these literally like assembly lines, you know, even when we just look into the grocery store, the people that just ringing up the groceries, all of that is not going to be there anymore. Those kind of jobs are not going to exist in the future. But the people that were trained in that school system are going to have a harder time to feel into, oh, wait, I am supposed to create my own job. I am supposed to go onto like an entrepreneurship and be entrepreneurial myself, like create my own business. Like, it seems so daunting. And I love how you and Rhema Room help the kids to become their own little entrepreneurs.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, we're looking forward to especially exploring that a lot this year. And as you know, my kids have their little cute businesses.
Yeah.
But it's true, not everybody's meant to be an entrepreneur. But when you think of the past, everybody essentially was an entrepreneur. You either worked on a farm and sold what you had, or you had a stand in the local market. Or, I mean, that's how you got by. You had to get creative. You had to think of what resources you had. Everything we have around us is the ingenious of someone in their brain creating something. And so that is the story of humanity. And that's what we should be creating or helping our children alongside of, like, can't wait to see what you create because it's inside of you. Instead of like, I mean, the school system is so dated, it's not even funny. It's like taking kids now out of the world of the internet and the new age and like the entrepreneur, the new jobs and everything, and putting them back in a system just because we don't know what else to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay. And not only that, speaking of like you go to college and now colleges, I mean, new graduate that I was counseling is like, he was going to spend $30,000 a year for something he wasn't even sure he wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So I'm like doing the math. I'm like 120. You don't even know what you want to do. 120. That is a crippling, crippling amount of debt.
And imagine what you can do with those $120,000. If he were to put that into a business as an investment, something that he already felt called to, that is something that brings him joy, that he's naturally talented in because he's been doing it since he's a little child. Imagine that, like 120K, if we've invested in our own self-development, in our own businesses, as much as we've invested in college, the world would look so different. Like, it would be such a different place. And I think, you know, much more joyful, much less competition, less wars, because people are actually following their heart and doing what brings them joy. They're less occupied with telling other people what to do. Because if you're living a life full of joy and peace and love, you don't care what other people are doing, unless they're hurting you, obviously. But let other people, you know, love and live and live, you know, just everybody can do whatever they want to do as long as we don't hurt each other.
And everybody on their journey, because like as two women that have created businesses, we know like there's a lot that goes into it. So you're very busy just knocking down your own little, like, I need to do this, I need to do that. And all that kind of stuff, like, yeah, you don't really have as much time for other things. And there's, I really like the, so we talk about micro schools, but micro entrepreneurship, communities, like all these things, like we need to, progress doesn't always mean to a better place. You know, there needs to be a conversation about, well, how much have we forgotten about the past and how much can we integrate things on a higher level, you know, on all spheres, and really reimagining how things can work for the betterment of the true. We have to speak about what is the true human spirit, the true human consciousness. And that's what the Rainbow Room essentially is all about, is like they come this way. And we are them. And so we are only dealing, there's a reality, right? Humans are a reality. Yes, we're creative and dynamic, but we also have a reality of we need to feed ourselves, sleep, all these things. So where's the balance, and what is the raw material of human being? How can we best, you know, work with it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I love that you mentioned that, because it's like shifting the perspective of thinking that kids are born into this world as this blank slate. Mm-hmm. And we as parents need to program them, and the schools need to program them, and we need to shape them. I remember I was at a playground in Germany, and there was a Russian mother with her child there too. And Emma and the little girl were playing with each other. And then she would ask me about what I see in the future of my child. Who do I want my child to be? And how am I going to shape her future? And I said to her, well, I want her to follow what brings her joy and create from her heart. And then she was like, looking at me, like, it's like the most foreign concept to allow the child to choose what they want to be. And I think it also comes down, you know, me coming from the astrology perspective, we can literally see that no one is born the same way. We have this inner blueprint inside of us that we're born with and we're coming into this world with. And we as parents, like now being a mother of two, I'm seeing that so fully now, because my parenting is similar to with Emma and Jacob, but they're both completely different children, you know? And it's like, I can only do so much as parents. I'm not shaping my child. I'm guiding them to be their best self. That's all I can do. Like, I cannot change their blueprint. I can only encourage and support them in expressing their blueprint to their highest good.
And that's what any parent will tell you, the same exact thing. And I think that's really an opening, is they really, from the second they come into the world, you can feel their spirit, you can feel, and you just witness it. And the biggest tragedy that happens to children is exactly that, trying to take that, whatever, you know, this beautiful spark of the universe, of consciousness, of whatever you want to call it, and then try and shape that into this mold that the world needs, right? This, you know, well, your teacher wants you to be this, and your parents want you to be this, and your friends want you to be this, and the mask comes on, and you tighten and like you twist yourself into all the ways that the world wants you to be, when you are already had like a divine purpose, a divine, like you are something just as is. And it's a hard thing for, because that's what the de-schooling and the whole thing is, because we don't think about it like that as a society. We talk about rights for human beings, and I think the next frontier has to be child rights, child advocates. Now, I think it should come through the parents. I don't believe in this idea of like institutions or other people raising children and saving them from, no, it needs to come from the family. The family is one of the first entities. It is the first entity ever. And so all change should come from within the family, within the humans of the family. I'm not religious, but it's so divinely appointed, this idea that we come to a mother and a father, and like we create, and we have siblings, and we have grandparents, and we have cousins, and we have all these things, these influences in our life to refine us and to bring out the best of us. And yes, we learn all those things, like I mentioned with children. We're not perfection. We come needing to kind of see where our path, like how do we fit into this puzzle? Mm-hmm. It's not a mask. It's a, as we know, and even with our friendship, you go towards things that feel good, towards people that get you, towards things that work, instead of just forcing yourself into like these shapes that you feel like the whole time you're like, do you even like me? Or do you just want me to be something I'm not? Or how do you?
Yeah.
I really had to dissuade myself of that, even of friendships and things like that, where it was like, I just need to be me and let the chips fall where they may.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I feel like it all comes down to allowing ourselves to take leadership over our own life and trusting in who we are. And from that point, we can experiment with different things and different pieces in our lives, but then we also have the intuition, oh, that doesn't feel right. And I'm not going to further go along that path because it doesn't feel good. Whereas if we are, you know, raised in a more traditional sense of the school system, in that tradition, then we may think, oh yeah, it doesn't feel good, but I have to do it, or I should be doing that, or that's what other people need me to do, or I should be quiet now, even though my relationship partner is really mean to me, but I should just let that because that's what it is. Or even my boss is not nice to me, but that's just, I just have to play that role, and I just have to listen and follow authority. I mean, we would have so many less people struggling in this world when we know more about who we are and listen more deeply to our intuition. Mm. And like knowing your inner blueprint, like I see it right here in front of me, your Libra sun, for anyone who's listening, who's like, what is her astrology? So you're a Libra sun and you're a Taurus rising, and your moon is between Taurus and Gemini. And so there's a bunch of other things. I'm not going to go too deeply into this, but one of the pieces that is so beautiful here is like when you were saying that you love to talk and you love to communicate, right? And that's one of the ways that we love to connect to, or talk and talk and talk. And when I saw that you had your moon on the cusp of Taurus and Gemini, like the Gemini aspect and the Libra sun, those are both communicators, like fresh ideas and being flexible and learning from different, you know, different subjects and connecting the dots and bringing it all together and then presenting it as a new idea and connecting people and connecting community and socializing and bringing people together. Mm. And I just see that so much in you. And then with your Taurus rising, with Chiron being conjunct the ascendant, it's like you're bringing back the tradition of how it was in the past, where we were more connected to Mother Earth, to our bodies, to the human self, to our natural resources. Absolutely. That's really that groundedness. And, you know, Taurus is like, you know, crafting and creating things that are sustainable and something that is comes natural to us. You know, and you're healing that wound. There's like that Chiron is the wounded healer. So you're a big spark in healing that wound within the collective where we have forgotten those natural resources within ourselves. And we have put them outside of ourselves, that authority. And now we're taking that back and you're helping. And you have literally your North Node in the house of children. Like you're literally helping, like North Node is your sole purpose. You're helping children to develop that discernment of who they are and what their natural resources are and how they can work with their natural resources in the best way.
Thank you for saying all that. It's so interesting because in different work or like spiritual little trips I've gone on, it's like the connector. It so brings to me so much joy to put two people together and just say, oh, I knew you guys would love each other. Or, you know, to bring, I love to be that person just collecting ideas and things. And yeah, I connector and is a big one for me on all levels and balance. I always, that's what I know most about Libra, but that is very important to me because if I'm off balance, it's a mess, you know? And always knowing that thing of like, that's why I only do the Rainbow Room on Tuesdays and Thursdays, because I know full well, knowing myself, if I did a 5 day a week kind of thing, it wouldn't be balanced for the children. It wouldn't be balanced for me. It wouldn't be balanced for the families. It would be falling into that same trap of like, well, this is what, you know, kids know. The 2 days a week allows for everybody to look forward to it, for it to be special, for it to be, you know, everybody with their full energy and, you know, it's, and the parents still have their time and influence. And it's such a tandem back and forth.
It's so true. Even though Emma literally wishes to go to Rainbow every single day.
Well, that's why we're doing the park dates and the extra stuff. I hear what you're saying.
So but, for anyone who's listening, I love how you were mentioning before, like other teachers and people that are coming from the education system, but also in our audience who is listening and be like, okay, I'm not living in Las Vegas. I can't, you know, have my child go to a Rainbow Room. And it fills up very quickly as well. So what are some options that parents-to-be or parents, people already have children, what are some options that they can do in order to implement more of that child-led education into their lives?
So when I talk about Montessori, some people don't really understand. At least Montessori to me is a philosophy. And so when I hear that somebody's thinking about having children or they're pregnant, I always recommend the book Montessori from the Start, because it is a way to bring like the ethereal things that we're talking about down to a granular level of like, well, how do you deal with like breastfeeding and sleep? And like, how do you make that work instead of like, oh, and then, oh my gosh, my child's been crying for like a long time and I don't know what to do. So I really like that book Montessori from the Start. And that's a really good jumping off point because it is a shift from the, how do I force my kid to eat, to sleep, to do these things. It creates space for the like, we can both get what we need. I don't have to completely give myself over to you of like, you want to eat 17,000 times a day and you want to wake up 14 times a night. No. How can we both get what we need? And it's a negotiation always between the child and the mother. So that's a great resource. You know, as you just read my welcome letter, I do the Instagram stories. I know they're very hard maybe for someone to follow because it's a mixture of my life and the things, but I let it just kind of stand there as like an inspiration point of like, they're learning, they're doing, like it's working. Mm-hmm. We're together. We're my children. and the Rainbow Room, it's all working. And for anybody who is like either wanting to model or do something like that, I totally think I'm available on Instagram for any questions. But another resource that I really like, if you were more like traditional and you needed something for work, I really advocate for Acton Academies. They're great and they're all over the US. If you were looking for a micro school that might be near you, I would look up Acton Academies and just follow through there, because a lot of those are kind of what I mentioned before of like, they're a mixture of like an idea and then a personality. And they're a lot of times home-based or a small environment. Mm. So other than that, I would look up the terms deschooling and just follow that vein, because there's a lot of work. I think all these paths kind of lead to one, whether somebody starts through the health input or through, you know, that all leads back to kind of the same place. And we talk about that a lot. Like, I like personality theory. You like astrology. I know friends that are very much into the nutritional front, but I think it all leads back to the same place of just like us trying to understand ourselves and others and how we can create like a new way of being and existing.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it's such an inspiring story too. We didn't even share so much about your story and how you created the Rainbow Room, because you were a flight attendant before, and then you
a lot of different jobs.
Yeah, you made your own business, mm-hmm. by doing what you love and being also an advocate for children. And so this is something where other people can also be very much inspired by. And I know from our meetups that there are more and more people looking to even create their own micro school at home, yeah. and looking to, you know, have their own, you know, play dates, even within the homeschooling community, you know, learning dates, or, you know, parents coming up and teaching the children as well. And I think coming back to that community-based schooling, oh, I'm so excited. I'm so excited that that's the future.
Yeah. I mean, because like we're saying, follow your joy, follow your heart. I love children. Like, I know that that's a special gift that was given to me. And so that was something, but there's one in every neighborhood, or two, three women. I'm not alone. And so imagine where it was just, instead of like, what's going on with the local school? You were saying like, well, who in my neighborhood is like a Rainbow Room? You know, who's doing something that's creating a safe space for children to come in and interact and be together? Who's doing that? And actually, that is a big inspiration from my roots, like coming from Idaho and Utah. Like, that's a pretty common thing, this idea of like an at-home preschool. And so now we've graduated, our ages are for Rainbow Room are like 4 to 10 typically. But, you know, it started as that idea of younger children just getting a little break from the day, and we've evolved. But I really think that that is possible in any and every area. Mm-hmm. So if people are led to that and they think that that's a cool idea, do it. Just start talking and reach out. And I'm always available to help anybody. I like to connect, so I'll help connect you to some resources.
Oh, yes, beautiful. And we're going to link your Instagram, the Rainbow Room, also into the episode description, so they can all reach out to you.
Yes, and please.
Yeah.
You have to bug me a few times, but because my inboxes, you know, are like, but you know how it is.
Yes. And so we have, before we're going to end this lovely interview, we also have three sacred questions that we ask each and every one of our guests. And those you can just answer in a shorter format.
Okay.
So the first question is, what does sacred mean to you?
That intuition, like the divine, the inside. What's inside?
Beautiful. And who is a sacred sister or a sacred brother to you? And what does it mean to have a sacred sister or a sacred brother?
I mean, my friendship with you and with Lynn, who is our sacred sister, those relationships, to have women that are grappling with really deep questions, and we can go very down these rabbit holes and then also come back out and deal with the baby and deal with a request and deal, and then go right back down the rabbit hole. So it means a lot to me to have those mirrored relationships as mothers, you know, kind of in the same situations, dealing with the same. And of course, my sisters in real life, I have my sister Abby and my sister Morgan, who are very special to me, and both mothers in the same stages. So we spend a lot of time together and cultivating that.
Beautiful. And how do you make something normal and mundane into something magical or sacred?
Perspective, just shifting, and gratitude, just questioning your first feeling. You know, I think we can all either go down the negative or the positive of like, oh, it's hard to get up. I don't know if I really want to get ready. But no, I'm lucky. Somebody wants to talk to me and I get to talk to my friend. And, you know, it's all just a shift of gratitude and it's all good.
Yes, that's so important to have those little shifts, and then also have those shifts in regards to how we look at learning in schools, you know, those little pieces, realizing the biggest and greatest school is life on earth.
Oh, yeah. So,
and it's one of the hardest schools as well. Yeah. So we're actually all in school at all times.
Totally. And that's how we should look at it. And we should be bringing in our teachers. I love the idea of somebody had once said, you know, find the five teachers you want. And I wrote them down, you know, and they're all people I don't know. They're on the internet. I listen to their podcasts, and but I'm so deeply, they feel like friendships, as you know, like that's sacred to me. This idea that we can have access to someone else's like thoughts and what they're working through so beautifully like that. Like, I mean, that's incredible to me. And I'm just so grateful for podcasts and conversations that I get to be privy to that I would never, like, I'm educating myself all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's so cool.
Yeah. And isn't that such a blessing of this age of Aquarius, this technology now, that we can actually share these ideas and knowledges around the world? And that community became so much bigger. We're literally the community of Earth, of Earthlings, rather than having our own, you know, little tiny village. And we were very dependent on whoever lived in that village. Now we can literally seek the people that are aligned with us and like-minded. Mm. And we can seek them through the internet, and then through the internet, even within our community. You know, there's this Next Door Neighborhood app. For anyone who is looking into that as well, or like Facebook has so many different groups, and like we can meet so many people that are in our communities actually living close to us who are like-minded that we had no idea about.
Oh, and that's how we found each other, yeah.
Yeah, and then we can actually start creating more of those beautiful child-led spaces for our children and for the future.
I completely agree, and I look forward as I see all the time more and more and more things popping up, you know, as a trend watcher from the time I started 10 years ago to now. Whew, so I can only imagine what another 10 years are going to bring. So it's very exciting.
So beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Emily, for being with us and for having this lovely interview, and for everyone here who is still with us and listening. We love you all. Thank you so much for listening to Sacred Sister Podcast. If this is something that was really resonating for you, or that really sparked something inside of you, please share it with your friends, with family members, with anyone that you feel like this will also resonate with, because we want to spread the word of the Rainbow Room and the child-led education, and really realizing how our inner child inside of us wants to play and wants to learn through play. And maybe that is a prompt for anyone who's listening, who maybe don't have a child just yet, but even asking yourself, what do I seek to play? How do I like to play? Mm-hmm. And how can I allow myself to play more? Because through the play, we actually learn what brings us joy, and we allow ourselves to learn new things that may have felt daunting otherwise, if we approach it from a place of I need to do this or I should be doing this.
Yes. So
shifting it towards play.
Encouraging that inner child play is some of the best work we can do, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And even before we have children, because then
absolutely,
then we can even dive deeper into inner child play with the children that we have.
Yes, totally. I love all of that. Yes.
All right. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Bye, everybody.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode today, beloved. If it resonated with you, we ask you to please share it with your sacred sisters, brothers, and beings alike. You have no idea the impact a simple share can make in someone's day, life, and growth.
And another way to show your love and support is by leaving us a rating or review on the app you're tuning into this from. And if you hang out on Instagram and your feed is in need of more uplifting and conscious spiritual content, follow us at Sacred Sister Podcast. So with that being said, we hope you have a wonderful day, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Namaste, beloved. Bye.